The day was March 10th, 1992, and I don't mean to brag, but I was a perfect parent. Picture of my child in my wallet? Check. Listened to parenting tapes and read parenting books? Check. I even had attended a class at the seminary about ministry and the family. Double check, because it was at the sem. I was a perfect parent on March 10th. There's one little detail I'm leaving out, and that is my firstborn son wasn't born until March 11th. I'm not bragging, because then on March 11th, my perfect parenthood went away. By the way, the picture was an ultrasound, if you didn't figure that out. Everything changed on March the 11th. The books I had read, they didn't talk about all the sleeplessness that followed. They didn't talk about the struggles. We're in the middle of basketball season here in the United States, the possession arrow. So when it was my turn to wake up at 3 a.m. for a feeding, the possession arrow, we literally had one. Someone gave it to us as a shower gift, pointed at me. And when it was Mary Beth's turn, it pointed at her, and on it went. But even, all the way back to March 11th itself, I remember the first test we faced that proved to me that my perfection was over. It was changing our first diaper. And we have this on video. We laugh hilariously whenever we watch it, because it took us about 25 wipes to wipe our first bottom of our first diaper change. You can hear my voice on the video. Honey, you missed a little micron speck of poop right over there. You've got to get that. He has to be sterile and clean. You know, you've heard that saying, right? Firstborn parents of firstborn child, the pacifier falls, they sterilize it in water for 3 minutes. The second child, they wash it off with water under the sink for 3 seconds. And the third child, they pick it up, lick it, and say, "Ah, good enough." This idea of what it meant to love this little creature. No book could prepare me for it. All of the struggles I had had in the dysfunctional family that I grew up that drove me to those books and those resources, wanting to do parenting right. You know, I think just maybe, I was a little bit like those Israelites that we heard about in our Old Testament reading. I had read all the books, all the manuals, prepared to teach a class on family. I was ready, like those people, to answer all the words that have been spoken, "We will do." Or so I thought. You see, all those words, all of what it really means to sacrifice and do feedings at 3 a.m, to change those diapers, to give the allowance, to scrimp and save and set aside, to do the acts of discipline that really do hurt me more than they hurt him. All of it to love a child as God has loved us. Maybe instead of reading all those books and listening to all those tapes, I would have been much better served, and my children would have been much better served, just reading the one book, just reading of this book, the Bible, reading what God gives to us. You think about all the tests that we've talked about here throughout Lent, the witness test, the test of stepping out and doing something big, the test of waiting, the sin test, what do I do with my sin, the judgment test, what do I do with someone else's sin, the acceptance test, the test of success, the big one, the test of rejection, the prayer test, do I go to God first in prayer rather than he's my last resort, and even the most amazing of all, the test of sacrifice, which I think brings us around to the idea of loving as parents. All of those tests, where we fall, where we fail them, Jesus kept them perfectly. That's what we've looked at all throughout these 6 weeks, the Sundays and Wednesdays. He kept them perfectly, and it is his perfect love that can help us be even imperfect people loving as he loved in this world. in that Last Supper, in John's gospel, in his version of it, is included something you may remember of, maybe you've seen statues of or recreations of, the washing of the disciples' feet. It awed even them. It made even them uncomfortable. Peter said, "Lord, you can never wash my feet." Maybe we need a tiny bit of history. But the way Jewish society worked then, especially for a rabbi with his followers, was that the most junior person in the company, it was their job. These disciples, these 12, had more frequently argued about which of them was the greatest. Maybe so that by doing so, they knew, I'm at number one in the pecking order, and number two, you are number 12. Maybe that's why they did it. Perhaps they just wanted to be at the top and not worry about who was on the bottom. But we do it too. We struggle and we want to say, I don't have to. I should have someone else's job. And whether it's the possession arrow of who does the diapers, or it's saying, well, someone else can pray about that. Someone else can fix that problem in society. There is this hesitation within us about how we live out love. These words, all the words that the Lord has spoken, we will do. We say it so confidently on Sunday. We say it and think it and pray it so hopefully in church. And we struggle with it so mightily out in the rest of the world. Moses tried. He tried so much by sprinkling the words of blood, by saying all the words again, to even covering the people with this blood that had been sacrificed, to remind them, you've been loved and sacrificed for. But even that didn't seem to empower them, because we know the rest of the story. We know how they struggled. We know how that generation didn't even make it into the promised land that God wanted for them. We know that they wandered for 40 years until a new generation could learn dependence on God. And maybe, just maybe, you and I have experienced some wandering where God's been waiting for us to really get dependent on him. In our time, in our prayers, in our bank accounts, in our conversations, in our sympathy, in our serving, in all things. I think it really starts with the realization that it was with that blood that we are offered, the blood of Christ. It's a participation in him. It's Jesus making you and me clean. Love cleanses us. Just like our baby son, who couldn't have cleaned his own diapers, you and I cannot clean our own stain of sin. All the words that we've said, that we regret, all the words we've left unsaid that we so wish we had spoken while we had the chance. He cleanses us of every thought, word, and deed that has been sinful and apart from God and God's loving ways. What a gift of love of Jesus to cleanse us. He also leads us. Sometimes it seems strange, like telling the two disciples, go look for a guy carrying a water jug. And we may not understand because, you know, in our culture, you know, what does that mean? But it would be the equivalent of saying, when you're walking downtown, you'll see a guy in pink high heels. Follow him. It would have really stood out to see a male in that culture carrying a water jar at that particular place and time. Strange instructions, hard instructions for some of us. Love our enemies. If someone asks you to walk 1 mile, walk with them too. Put other people's needs ahead of our own. In our anger, do not sin. Don't let any unwholesome words come out of our mouth, but only that which is useful for the building up of others, that it may benefit all those who listen. And on they go. Do you know, scholars estimate that when it says Moses took the entire book of the covenant and read it to them in their hearing, it probably took 4 to 5 hours. And you thought our church services were long. Love that cleanses us, yes, from all those sins. But love also that in a serving, amazing gesture of love, not only cleanses us, but then shows us how to lead. It's amazing to me that Jesus never asked us to do anything he wasn't willing to do himself. And I hope, dear church, we remember, he never asks us to do anything he hasn't empowered us to do. When he says, I want you to serve others, when he says, you know, I, your Lord and Master, have now washed your feet, I want you to wash one another's feet. When he says, now that you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them. It's coming from someone who's always done them faithfully and in love, because his Father loved him and he was showing us the way. He was blazing the path as hard as it seems, but he was also empowering us so we are never doing it by our own strength. As hard as it was for me to figure out parenting, as hard as any of it is for us to figure out any of our relationships, any of our roles in this life, we never have to do it by our own strength. Jesus, help me to love that person that's hard to love. Help me to not just hear the voice of criticism and shame in my own ear and in my own heart, but help me hear your voice of love and acceptance and forgiveness and transformation. Jesus, lead me in the way. He once told Peter, and again, this is from John's version of tonight's gospel, the focus outside of the meal, or beyond the meal, I should say. He said to Peter, where I'm going, you can't come right now. Meaning he couldn't go to the cross. Jesus always goes first. He always does the hard work, the heaviest lifting first. He shows the way. He shows how to love. He shows how to pray. He shows how to entrust the Father, even with his weakness and his struggles. So much we can learn from him. The perfect parent is our Heavenly Father, who gave his perfect Son to forgive all of God's imperfect children, you and me. He loves us enough to forgive us and restore us when we fail and when we fall. He prayed for Peter. When he was about to fall, he said, Peter, I've prayed for you and the disciples because you're about to betray me, or deny me, excuse me. You're about to be scattered like wheat. Satan wanted to do more. He wanted to devour you up, but I've prayed for you. And he still prays for us. He restored Peter. He restores us. He'll do that in this meal in a few minutes when we have it. And then lastly, I think one of the takeaways we can get from this supper is how he unites us. You heard it in the epistle reading. Because there's one bread, we who are many are one body. I'm convinced there is no force more powerful in this world when churches of twosies and threesies and fivesies and fifties, when churches love as Jesus loved. Starting with loving each other, but then letting that love be so powerful and so transformational that it goes beyond our walls and it goes beyond our homes and it goes beyond our imagination. When we follow his lead, when we love as he loved, when we let him empower us in his sacrament, then with that empowerment, we can indeed do all that he has said and count on his grace for any way or any time we fall short. Jesus said, I love the Father and do exactly what my Father commanded me. You and I, we can only reach for that perfection now until we're there in heaven with him. But until then, let's soak in that empowering love. Let's let that guide us and show us. Let us show the world what the love of God looks like. It's the most powerful force in this world. It's waiting for us in our altar time here. And it's ready to be displayed in our life this Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, Easter, and beyond. May God be glorified as we trust him. Amen.